In the spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional lands we gather. Good morning. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria. My name is Oliver Belisle, and it is my privilege to serve as your worship associate today on January 21st, 2018, for our Sunday service. Whatever life you happen to be living, whether smooth-flowing or challenging, we are so pleased that you have come to live it with us this morning.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to yet another wonderful day to be together in community. We've been exploring the theme this month of January of resistance. And every time I say the word resistance, I feel like doing something that looks like resistance. So if you'll do it with me, resistance. And in our world, we've been talking a lot about resistance of outside things, but I realize that sometimes we also have these little internal resistances. I hear some laughter, so maybe you're familiar with those internal resistances. It's that form of resistance that we're going to explore this morning. What does it mean in our own lives to resist certain things? When might that resistance be good for us? And when might it be a stumbling block keeping us from the next type of growth that we need to do in our lives? So this morning we have a very special chalice lighter who's going to help us with the task of kindling the flame that will remind us that sometimes when we're in the midst of resistance, we need a little light. So Sophia, if you can come forward now. Because we're kindling the flame and we're remembering that resistance sometimes gets in our way and sometimes we need a little extra light, and our community can help us, can help light the way and remind us when we've gotten off track. We will kindle this flame and remember that the light of hope, the beacon that shows us the way down the path, is often found together. So sometimes I think we sing songs in our congregation to remind us of things that we should know or that we do know, but forget a lot. So that last song we just sang, sometimes we forget how nice it is to be here together. And sometimes we forget to be grateful for the winding road. We think it just winds a little too much. We'd like it to be a little more direct. But sometimes it's the winding road that teaches us some extra things along the way. And if we hadn't taken that turn, we wouldn't have seen the beauty in that part of the world, that part of the path. And so this morning, our time with the kids is also our time to welcome our new members who may have been on winding paths. I don't know how direct their route has been to get here. But they're going to, in a moment, I'm going to have them come forward, and they're going to share, instead of, we're doing a little change, because you know how Shauna likes to change things up. So instead of doing two truths and a lie this morning, I'm warning you already that we're not doing that, we are going to do instead a fun fact about our new members. So you've got, first I want to just remind you that you have in your order of service a whole booklet that I invite you to look at that says New Member Ceremony on it, and you're going to need it in a little bit because there's a responsive reading at the end that we're going to be using together. But I point it out to you now because there's some bios of our new members, and you're going to want to get to know a little bit about each of these folks more than you're going to know in this little short ceremony that we have. And twice a year, we have this ceremony with our new members to remind us that anytime new people come, we as a community are changed. We're grateful to have them with us, and we're also reminded that it's in being together and having rituals that we remember and we notice these significant moments. Do any of you know what a ritual is? Kiana does. What's a ritual?
It's something that you do every, like, my family, we look in the mirror while my mom's showing our hair and says, I'm happy, I'm sad.
Oh.
I'm grateful, I'm
Nice. So Kiana says in her family they have a ritual when they're brushing their hair in the morning and they're looking in the mirror and the mom's helping them. They'll say, I'm happy, or I'm sad, or I'm grateful. They'll look in the mirror and they'll figure out kind of, how am I doing right now? So we have sometimes rituals or things that we do that help us to pay attention to what's happening in our lives. And sometimes, I don't know if you've noticed this, but sometimes we get into things, we forget that rituals are important, and we start just falling into routines. I think routines are different from rituals. So routines are like the things we do all the time, but we're not really paying attention. Like we brush our teeth every day, and we don't always really pay attention to the fact that we're brushing our teeth. But rituals are things where we say, ah, I'm going to do this, and it's going to help me notice that this moment is important. And actually, the more we notice certain moments as important, guess what? They all start to feel a little more important. So that's why I think rituals are really valuable things that we do together. So this morning, we've got five new members, and they're going to come forward now. I'm going to invite them to come up, and we're going to get ready to, and one of them's coming out of the choir here, and we're going to get ready to do our ritual with them. And our membership team folks, so let me get the new members to come. Why don't you get, like, Mark, why don't you stand here? And this way we're kind of fanned out here together. So see, we're here together. And so I want to just first introduce you to these lovely new members. First here to my left is Mark Danley. You've got his bio here. We've got Cressa Sisu. We've got Sharon Flaherty. Shannon Roberts and Elisabetta. Elisabetta. I've been working on this and I still don't have it right. Elisabetta, who is with, and are you five or six?
Five and a half.
I said five or six and she's five and a half. Elisabetta. And this is Patricia Hofstrand, who came out of the choir to come join us for our ritual this morning. So what we first want to do is share together. So pull out your brochure, please, and turn to the back page, which has our responsive reading. And you'll see everybody's parts are neatly lined out. So I'm going to read the minister part. The new members have their section, and then the congregation, and then all of us together. These persons of faith stand before you in formal recognition of their belonging in this religious community. To appreciate your gifts and to support you in your striving.
We acknowledge that with your arrival, we are changed, and we embrace that change, for your presence enriches us.
And all of them together?
Together, we live in our mission, strengthened in spiritual growth, supported in community, energized by diversity. We strive.
Of commitment and connection, we will now participate together in our ritual. So what we have here is we have Lorna Anthony representing as president of the congregation, the official hand of welcome, we like to call it, so she will shake all of your hands. We have plants for each of you to take home, because we see this both as a moment in which we hope you will continue to flourish and grow as a part of this community, and we see you as adding light and sparkle to our lives as a community. So I think it's lovely that they're yellow. Radiant, like all of you. And then we have the membership book over there for you to sign. So we'll have you just, why don't you just work your way, since we're already in a line, starting with Patricia heading over that way, and then we'll come back and have you all share a fun fact. So if you'll just shake Lorna's hand on your way over there, and then we'll have you sign the membership book and receive your plant. So now, I invited our new members to share with you a fun fact. And by that I meant something that's not in the bio, something that you wouldn't know unless you got to know them a little bit more than you do right now. And I understand that Elisaveta has something, too. Do you have something fun that you want to tell? Okay. Oh, she was thinking about one. I heard her before, so she's going to whisper it to her mom. See. Yeah?
I took my first steps when I was a baby in Hawaii.
Oh, she took her first steps when she was a baby in Hawaii. And Shannon, what's your fun fact?
Well, I seem super outgoing, and you will all learn that about me, but I have a very interesting self-esteem issue, and not everybody knows that, so...
Huh. Well, I know that over time. Okay. So she's not as extroverted as she seems. Stealth introvert. Cressa, what is an interesting fun fact about you?
Well, a fun fact about me is that when I was growing up and as an adult, I had a lot of fear. And so I decided to tackle that on head on, and I went skydiving.
Okay. So when Cressa tackles something, we know she's serious. Okay. Patricia, a fun fact about you.
Okay. My fun fact is I rode down the Grand Canyon on a mule called Clementine.
Did you sing the whole time? You're the choir. I would have been really tempted. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. And Sharon?
My fun fact is when I was 13, my mother gave birth to my youngest sibling, and she had a lot of difficulties after birth. But what she did to my other three siblings and myself was she bonded us in a way that I don't think would have happened, and we became a huge advocate for each other, and our family became closer than ever.
You never know what siblings can do for you. Let this be a lesson to you, kids. And Mark, a fun fact.
In my life, I've studied 5 languages, and I speak 1.
Okay. So not everything we study stays with us. But I think probably many of us can relate to that. Well, welcome, new members. We're delighted that you're with us. And as you can hear by the warmth and our laughter and our engagement and our smiles, we are delighted to have you with us. Please join me now in the spirit of meditation and prayer. Centering yourself in the center of your being, in the center of this moment, in the center of life. Spirit of life and of love, in these moments when we remember to breathe deeply, when we remember to look within, when we remember to ask ourselves how we're really doing, we find that sometimes it's hard to know. The jumble, the tumult, the busyness, the frantic pace, all keeps us from knowing who we really are, what we really long for, how we wish to be loving in the world. And so in this pause, in this moment, may we recognize and may we feel that we are enough, that all the ingredients we need, all that we would hope to offer, all that we would hope to be, lies within. Spirit, we know that within, among, and beyond us all, there is a pulse of life which is just as it should be. Help us to allow more and will less. May it be so. And amen.
Living the life you have is easy when things go smoothly. But when you're in a crawl space, wielding a 60-pound jackhammer for 3 days straight, living the life you have can be an existential crisis. You start questioning past choices and fantasizing about what might have been if you had just stayed in college. Or picked a different career. Maybe then you wouldn't be trapped under a house, chipping away at a concrete slab and hauling the rubble out in buckets, two at a time. As you can tell, this particular job made an impression on me. I was drenched in sweat and covered in dust. My body ached all over. I felt isolated and lonely, and that was only 2 hours into the job. I would have quit right then and there, but I needed the money. So there was no getting out of it. I would have to keep chipping away awkwardly, alone in the dark, until the work was done. As I grappled with this reality, a question popped into my head. What makes demolition work so wretched? And to my surprise, I couldn't answer. It wasn't the dust. That's par for the course in construction, and it never bothered me before. And it wasn't the physical exertion. Every day after work, I spent hours at the gym, lifting weights, playing squash, or running on a treadmill. What was the problem with demolition then? I decided it had to be my opinion of it. I believed in my heart that demolition was soul-crushing work, and I reacted to it accordingly. I couldn't quit the job, but maybe I could quit telling myself how horrible it was. I couldn't change the job, but maybe I could change the way I looked at it. I thought of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, these are not the droids you are looking for. What if I could play Jedi mind tricks on myself? What if I told myself, this is not the job you think it is? What if instead I convinced myself that I was getting paid to exercise? Not only was I collecting a paycheck, I was also getting my cardio in before I got to the gym. And to my surprise, this shift made demolition work, if not enjoyable, then at least tolerable. And in any case, I wasn't looking for a way out anymore, and that was good enough for me.
I sometimes think one of the most fun aspects of my job is getting to choose the hymns when I'm the preacher. I love that last hymn that we just sang, and it comes from our Transylvanian relatives. And I was thinking, after hearing Oliver's story, what if you sang a song like that while you were doing demolition? It's an existential song. Who am I? What am I? I'm part of the sea. I'm a drop in the ocean. I'm the sunlight that bounces upon it. I'm a voice in the choir of life. Living the life you have. As often happens when I begin preparing for a theme, I originally thought that resistance was one-dimensional, that it was simple, that I didn't know how we were going to spend 4 weeks talking about it. I thought exclusively about the public ways in which we express resistance. Resistance to outside forces, to the systems that have a huge impact on our lives. Economic systems, political systems, cultural systems. For a time, it was that resistance to external forces that was all I could see when I heard the word resistance. The longer I looked, however, the more I began to wonder about the internal forces of resistance. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that sometimes those things are connected. Sometimes I'm pushing against an external force which is also causing me some internal resistance. Think internalized racism and homophobia and such. But they are not one and the same, that external and internal resistance. And so this morning I want to focus on the internal places of resistance, the parts of each of us that push against what is the status quo in the world and in our personal lives. Specifically this morning, I want to ponder aloud a little bit about the times when it might be wise to heed the internal resistance, to stick with what is, and those times when we might want to push through or challenge that patch of resistance. Sometimes there is that within us saying, now is not the time to push that boulder up that hill. And we need to listen to that. But then there are other times when that resistance within us is telling us it's time to get to work. There are times, I think, when we look at our own internal places of stuckness, our internal resistance, and might see it as an accurate barometer, almost like the weather person looking at what's going on. Oh, barometric pressure's rising. Time to do something about that. Sometimes my gut or my intuition will tell me that something in my life is out of place or not right or off in some way. And in those instances, it is likely a place of resistance within me that I would be wise to listen to. It can be about something large, like a job, or speaking one's truth at the holiday meal after years of staying silent. Or it could be about something small, like finally signing up for that exercise class that your New Year's resolution 3 years ago said you were going to sign up for. Or it could be taking something off of your calendar when you realize that your life doesn't allow for enough deep breaths. I had a moment like that, a moment of internal resistance that really shook me to my core, and it was back in 2003. I was a newly minted minister. I graduated from seminary when I was 26 years old. Knew a lot about life, had lots to share. Got my first ministerial job when I was 28. Began serving a small congregation of about 150 people in Madison, Wisconsin. Bless their hearts. Bless their hearts because they loved me, and I wasn't that good. and bless their hearts because they made me better. They loved me into being better than I was. And I'm still in touch with a few people. In fact, one of the people from that congregation just got in touch with me recently to interview me because she's in seminary now, preparing for ministry. But there I was in Madison, Wisconsin, a place where, much like much of Canada, it's winter most of the time. A place where when the jazz musician came in February and played a song for us, she entitled Forever February, she said, we'd understand. And there I was in Madison, Wisconsin, having moved there to be in a relationship that I was convinced was going to last the rest of my life. Sure that I was in the right place at the right time and the right ministry. My path, my road, did not look winding at all. And then everything changed in one fall. My grandfather, who had just turned 90 in August, began to decline in health. My partner of over 5 years, with whom I lived and had been building an entire life with, just decided one day that she was done. And I woke up one morning and I thought, what am I doing in Madison, Wisconsin? All the reasons I came here, all the reasons I was so sure I was in the right place don't exist anymore. None of my people are here. None of my family, none of my friends, one of my dearest friends in the world, he actually flew in from North Carolina to spend a weekend with me while I sobbed, and we watched this movie set in the Mediterranean. It was beautiful. And I dreamed about, what am I going to do? And at that moment, I got a call, a literal as well as a figurative, maybe even religious call, from somebody I'd gone to seminary with, asking if I would come and work with him at a congregation in Washington, D.C. He sort of apologized for asking. He realized it was a little bit weird to be calling out of the blue, asking me to think of uprooting my life and coming to Washington. But would I think about it anyway? And I told him, I said, well, you know, what's funny, Rob, is if you had called me 2 weeks ago, I would have told you no and hung up the phone. But my life has changed in the last 2 weeks, so let me think about it. And there began an excruciating, therapeutically driven process of trying to decide whether I should stay or go. It was painful and it was excruciating, not because in some ways it wasn't obvious that I should, of course, go to Washington, D.C., but this congregation, this dear, sweet group of 150 people that were loving me into being and loving me into being better, I had only been with them for about a year and a half. How could I turn around and leave? But that's what I decided to do. Writing that letter of resignation was one of the hardest things I've ever done. In fact, I still remember, even though I haven't looked at the letter in ages, that one of the lines of my letter said, "This decision has nothing to do with all of you and everything to do with all of me." And though it was hard in many ways for the congregation that I left, in fact, years later, I bumped into someone from that congregation who told me how mad she still was at me for leaving. And I said, fair enough, fair enough. It was really hard. I felt that it was important for me to heed that inner voice. That voice of resistance that was telling me that a miserable person would likely make for a miserable minister. The voice that was telling me that I would be modeling a life I wouldn't want anyone else to have. That's my story, or one of my stories, of an inner sense of resistance prodding me to do the deep work that I needed to do in my own life to really know myself. At other times, perhaps, though, we have a longer-term niggling sense of resistance that isn't brought about by a particular situation like mine was. Perhaps we have something longer-term that we have been pushing against and have deliberately chosen not to change anything or do anything differently. We take the so-called path of least resistance and go along to get along. In the end, however, we realize that perhaps at some point that path of least resistance isn't good enough. That it might be the least resistance, but it doesn't feel very fruitful. We come to a sort of moment of truth when we realize that we need to dig in and dig deep and confront our stuckness. So I invite you to take a moment now to think about whether you have had such a moment in your life. Have you had to confront a stuck place? What did you do? How'd you get out of it? We each wrestle with these inner dialogues we have, these inner conversations about how we're moving in the world and whether or not it's where we're supposed to be, whether we are doing what we need to be doing. And yet we live and move in this culture that's constantly telling us all kinds of things that are mostly not helpful. Have you noticed that? Our culture is always encouraging us to see ourselves as deficient in some kind of way. To look at our lives and see only a lack. To see only what isn't there and not what is. And this is pretty bad for us in so many ways. Like bad for us physically, emotionally, mentally. Because we're perennially thinking of ourselves as inadequate and our lives as less than they should be. Our culture tells us, well, if we just had that fancy new car or the bigger house or the slimmer waistline or the whatever, then our lives would be better, right? We would be happier, more well-adjusted people. But it's also bad for us to continue to swim in this cultural soup, this cultural malaise of you're not good enough. You only need this. Because there's always something more or better that we ought to be seeking if that's what we think. And if that's the case, then darn it if I can't be grateful for what is. I can't even be grateful would be like, that's a pretty high bar. I can't even see the life that I have as sufficient. It's enough that it has enoughness to it. Can your life as it is right now, today, be good enough? Why can't we live what is and savor it? Living the life you have sounds so wonderfully simple. I mean, really, what other life are you going to live, right? You got one, you might as well enjoy it, or at least make the best of it. And yet, to do that, you might have to come up with some new type of resistance. The resistance that pushes against our culture's messages to you. You might have to say, I'm blocking out all that noise. I'm putting on the noise-canceling headphones so that I don't hear everything that tells me my life is not enough, it's not good enough, it's not adequate the way it is. That if only I had something more, something better, I would be happier. You will have to resist all the voices, internal and external, that make you think that life as you know it is not what it ought to be. Friends, I ask you this morning, how much pain and disappointment have we all endured in life because we resist what is? A lot. I would wager a lot. And this is where I think our Buddhist brothers and sisters have a lot to teach us. Because we who resist what is and find that we're in pain because of it would learn a lot from the Buddhists who tell us that life is suffering. They just put it out there. Sometimes I'm like, well, that's depressing. Sheesh. Give me a little something. Life is suffering? It's just... But they tell me that life is suffering. Buddhists tell us that our life is suffering because of our attachments. Because we're so attached to wanting things to be a certain way, to wanting things and objects, wanting people to be the way we want them to be, because we said so. One translation I read of the Buddha's words on this subject was that the attachment to the desire to have, craving, and the desire not to have, aversion, is what we struggle with. That's the source of our suffering. It's the craving and the aversion. You notice that in none of that, we want and we push away. But in no case do we simply be with what is. There is no posture, there is no space in craving and aversion for contentment. I'm always wanting more or pushing away something that's here that I don't want. And I don't want to deal with it. So take it away. So we want and we push away, but we don't just make peace with what is. Dispositionally, I think I'm a middle way person. I think my wife can attest to this because I'm always like, well, we could do this or we could do that, but let's go to the middle. What's the middle option? Everything, you know, I'm like a person not of extremes, I guess. I tend to avoid them. I don't want the all in or the all out. I'm like, well, what's the middle way? And with this dilemma about resistance, I think a middle way might actually be right. I think my disposition might help me out here. And maybe it's something we all need, is to find a middle way. How do we listen to the resistance in us that calls us to wholehearted, authentic living and not, at the same time, somehow not resist so much that we can still appreciate and even at times enjoy and savor our lives just as they are? Do you get how that's kind of a funky paradox? Like, on the one hand, I should be listening to the resistance, the places in me that made me leave Wisconsin and go to Washington, D.C. The resistances are important to listen to sometimes, because sometimes it's those little niggly things that make us grow in the ways that we need to grow. And at the same time, there's a relaxing into what is. There's an acceptance of my life as it is that's so very important in a culture that tells me that there's nothing worth savoring. So as I close this morning, I just want to invite us to think about holding that. Holding how we could both resist complacency in our lives, because there's still so much growing and changing that we all want to do throughout our lifetime. And if we just say, I'm done, going to be missing out on a lot, right? So I want to resist complacency. I want to continue to grow and change and invite things into my life that might encourage me to learn new things. And somehow I want to simultaneously embrace what is. Resist complacency. Embrace what is. Your life is enough, just as it is right now. And it is calling you on, calling you forward, calling you toward the best that you can muster. May we find ways in our lives to resist complacency and to embrace our lives now and always. Blessed be. And amen. Resist complacency. Embrace what is. Every time I sing that closing hymn and I get to those lyrics in the first verse, so treasure it and measure it with deeds of shining worth. Treasure it. That's the embracing what is part. And the deeds of shining worth sometimes involve resisting complacency to find that ounce of additional love you have to share, that one more smile, that one more hopeful gesture. May you resist complacency, and may you find ways to love your life just as it is, because it's yours, and there's none other like it. So treasure it and measure it with deeds of shining worth. Blessed be, and amen.